Hello, and welcome to Life Lab. I'm David Ponder.
And I'm Zach Schaefer.
We created a candid podcast for busy people. We get right to the point of our topics, and we keep them to 30 minutes or less.
We wanted to put our ideas out there, share it with people we love, and if it spreads, great.
Our show has no edits and no gimmicks.
Like it or don't, we initially started this project for ourselves, to record our thoughts for our kids, but our friends and family thought we should share it, so here you go.
Hello, and welcome to Life Lab. I'm David Ponder.
I'm Zach Schaefer.
And today we're going to be talking about value extraction, is what we originally
what
called it.
What a terrible fucking name we had there.
It's actually making the most out of every situation in life, you know? I guess value extraction can apply to things as well as situations, so maybe it's a broader term, but really, making the most out of every situation in life, making the most out of life, which, I mean, it seems like a lot of commonsensical things like, well, of course you want to make the most out of life. But it's funny how many people will say that and then they'll act differently just every day. They like fall into a pattern where they are constantly having self-limiting beliefs and negative thoughts, trying to use crutches to dull their emotions or take their attention out of their present situation elsewhere.
I think modern philosopher John Hughes says it best. Life moves pretty fast. If you don't stop and look around once in a while, you could miss it.
Yeah.
From Ferris,
said through Matthew Broderick.
That's right.
Matthew Broderick.
But I truly believe that. And to me, that's what where my mind went right away is in order to extract value, and we'll talk about what that means, you've got to pay attention. You have to be conscious and in the moment wherever you are in order to get value out of something or to give value to someone or something.
I agree 100%. And I would posit a question here, which is, why is it that we are so apt to wander? Why are we so apt to allow our mind to focus on something else rather than the present situation?
We could do a whole episode on that, and we could get into the neurology and psychology behind it. I mean, my initial response is because we're being pulled in so many directions professionally, relationally, emotionally. We create expectations for ourselves that are crazy high that most people wouldn't even want to hold you to. It's tough to stay in the moment because you feel like, oh, I've got my task list, my to-do list. Mm-hmm. I've got so many things to do. Yeah. I don't have time to stop and smell the roses.
Yeah, it's weird. It's like there's this world that we conjure up in our head, and we have to give that world attention in order to try to like manifest it in our current world. But there's like a balance there. You can go too far in that manifesting that world in your imagination side, and it can make you sad, and you can miss the present. There are, you know, the good things in the present that you should be paying attention to and you should be making the most out of. You can miss them, like that Ferris Bueller quote said. It reminds me of something I heard that was really interesting, and I can't remember where it was from. Definitely a podcast I was listening to. But it basically said humans are the only animal that have this imagination machine. It's basically like a reality prototyping machine in our head. So we don't have to we don't have to imagine what a licorice-flavored, steak sauce would taste like. We can just be like, no, that wouldn't be good. You know what I mean? We don't have to actually do it and taste it to figure out that we wouldn't like it. We can prototype it in our head and be like, nope, wouldn't like that, right, and then not do it. And that machine is very powerful because it allows us to think about things and imagine things and act accordingly. However, it can also be negative because we can make whatever world we want in our head and focus on things that really aren't real.
Absolutely. I call that maze making. We make the maze in our head and we stay in our head. And oftentimes then when we open our mouth, we have a self-fulfilling prophecy of whatever negative mazes we've created.
Mm.
But you're right. It can be the exact opposite. It can be the rose-colored glass situation as well. Here's something. I'm going to go a little morbid. I mean, unless you had anything else to add on that.
No, just the one thing about that you said about maze making made me remember the thing that Tony Robbins said, which is basically like when you're driving a car, whatever you're looking at, you tend to steer toward. So maze making is basically like we overlay our imagined world onto reality, and then our reality tends to become that. So it's like whatever whatever we're looking at, whatever we're paying attention to, that's what we're going toward.
Yep.
Yeah.
A small reset. So I used to do a lot of speaking engagements. And last week I did a guest lecture over at SIUE for about 70 students, 8 in the morning on a day when I'm not supposed to be over there normally. So, you know, a bit of a commitment, but it was on a topic I really enjoy, conflict resolution and collaborative team behaviors. And these public health students are working in teams, and I've done this in the past, and I guess they loved it. So she wants to bring me back every semester. So I consciously, on my way over there, was thinking, oh, I have to go give this guest lecture, is how you naturally want to think about it. But then I instantly reframed it and said, no, I get the opportunity to change 70 people's thoughts on the topics I'm going to discuss. And as soon as I thought that, I spent some time thinking what that means. And it was so empowering. And so then I brought that energy and obviously that positive vibe into the 8 a.m. room, and they all saw it. You know, they felt it. They got energized from my energy. And it was because I had the opportunity to positively influence people rather than check the box. Oh, I did some more service. That was good.
I love that because you got my mind going somewhere it wouldn't have gone, which is thinking about something as an obligation versus an opportunity.
Mm.
And it's amazing how we build our lives, right? We say, oh, I want to become this. I want to start doing these things. And then with those things that you become, whether it be professionally or even a hobby or just having new friends, you gain these responsibilities, these obligations to fulfill your role in that situation. And if you start looking at them like obligations rather than opportunities, you will conjure that negative emotion with it. That's crazy.
I love the obligation versus opportunity headline. That's really good.
Yeah.
Here's I'm going to go a little morbid. So when I coach certain people, I might start with this question, but I'm thinking about starting with this question with anyone I coach. I've done it. You know I've done it. But I need to redo it. And it's what I call the coffin question. Writing your obituary. What do you want? I read the paper every day, and I always flip past the obituary section, but it's interesting that, you know, a person's whole life is summarized in about three sentences, because then the next three sentences are who's still alive after they've passed and where the whatever ceremony or ritual they're going to have. And so it's so powerful. What do you want your life to have stood for? What value do you want to have added? And in order to do that, I really think you need to be doing what you just mentioned, is finding, seeing the opportunities, like appreciating life. The fact that we're alive and conscious and able to even talk about this shit right now is insane.
You're right. You're absolutely right. And it goes toward what you were saying of understanding the present moment. Death is it's reality. It's going to happen. And we walk around all day acting like it won't, which is... You know, it's a detail about our current present reality that is uncomfortable, and we don't want to recognize it, and so we act as if it's not real.
495. That's how many months you and I have left to live based on the current life expectancy for males in the U.S. I just looked that up earlier. We have 495 months left to add our value on this planet, to extract value, and to live the good life.
Well, you know, that's one of my fears that I currently have is, you know, I've had health problems in the past. So that average, if I hit that average, that will be really great for me, you know?
Right.
And having kids and them as responsibilities now, I have a greater fear about my health and And I generally try to be healthy, you know, like I work out, I generally eat okay, but I could probably make some better decisions when it goes to those things. But I can tell you, like, that fear in the back of your head is something that you can, it can negatively taint every situation that you're in. Well, you know what I mean?
Well, I would assume so. I never had, you know, your previous health problems.
But no, I just mean any, first of all, fear in general can negatively
absolutely
taint that. That's one that I have that whenever I think about, you know, like my acting with intention, like what is your intention for your kids? What do you want them to have, to be, to whatever? How do you want them to look at you as a father? You know, I always am like, well, this is what I think. This is what I want. But I always have that tinge in my head. I got to be honest. And it's a scary one, which is like, will I be able to see it through?
Well, you do a good job of hiding that, or not hiding, but managing that, because I'm with you all the time, and I don't know if I was in your situation if I'd be able to manage that as swiftly as you do.
Yeah. Well, it goes back to when I was in the situation. Everyone was like, oh, you're so strong. I can't believe, you know, what a strong person you are. And I kind of reject that because I didn't choose to go into that situation, and it didn't benefit anybody else. You know what I mean? It's like, if I was taking that on as a burden force to alleviate someone else, and I was doing it voluntarily, well, then okay, then call me a strong person, you know? But this was something that just happened to me. I didn't choose it. I wouldn't have chosen it and gone through it. And if you're like, well, you get to have it or someone else has it, you know, I would have been like, well, somebody else, please.
Right. Pass that
button. Yeah, so it goes back to all that, and it's like, you know, I deal with it swiftly now because I think I just came to the conclusion I can either wallow in pity and sorrow and whatever, or I can just move on and try to, like what we're talking about now, try to make the most of life and your situation.
When you were quote unquote dying at the time back then, were you still able to find value in life? When you're in that hospital on chemo, on radiation, were you still able to be in the moment, to be extracting whatever positives you can, or was it?
Yes and no. Yes and no. So quick backstory for anyone listening who doesn't know. I would imagine most people listening do know. I had Hodgkin's lymphoma when I was 17, and then it came back when I was 19. I went through 2 rounds of chemo, a round of radiation, and a stem cell transplant. So yes and no. So when it first happened to me, I felt invincible, and it was like denial, right? I was 17. This couldn't be me. They're wrong. You know, I'm not, I can never die, all that. And then being faced with actual mortality was like, well, okay, now I have to think about life in a completely different way than I've thought about it. And coming to terms with that was really hard. There was a lot of time where I had to lay in a hospital bed, you know, by myself, or with, even if there was a visitor there, just sitting quietly, where I just had tons of thinking to do. So in those moments, I made the most of that thinking to try and come to grips with my reality. On the flip side, and I did a lot of like soul searching then, and then making decisions about the future. Like, well, if I get through this, then I'm going to whatever, right?
The consummate computer programmer doing conditional hilarious statements, well, in his head as a 17-year-old.
I don't know. I think anybody would. I think anybody would. But so then on the flip side, there were times when I was just like, life was just full of pain and suffering because of the stuff I was going through, surgeries, biopsies, you know, the treatments. And in those instances, no. I tried to basically sleep as much as I could, like meditate and be somewhere else, and stuff like that. So I actually tried not to be present in those moments.
Yeah, that's very interesting.
Yeah.
I want to talk a little bit about the word value. So when you hear that, you know, value extracting, trying to find value, trying to add value, what does that make you think about?
It, you know, it would have made me think about, I would have had this really complex answer, I think, a year ago. But since we started doing Life Labs, we hit on something that I think is true. Your life boils down to the way you feel on a day-to-day basis. Like, how do you feel right now? Do you feel good emotionally, or do you feel bad? And that's it. So your values are what you decide or what you think makes you feel good or makes you feel bad.
I like that. That's really, really well said. The accumulation of your emotions. I've come up with what I call a fulfillment formula, and it is simple. It's three questions. And if the answer to any one of these is no, in my opinion, you should stop what you're doing and try to do something else. Maybe not in that moment, especially if it's tied to your livelihood and income and supporting your family. But if it's just lifestyle driven, having a bigger cave or a faster car, if the answer is to no to any of these questions, my advice would be do something different. The three questions are, am I happy? One. Two, does what I'm doing bring out the best in me? Three, does what I'm doing give me the opportunity to bring out the best in others? If it's no to any one of those, there's something out there that you can get a yes, yes, yes to.
Yeah, that's awesome. I love that. That's a really good. Those three questions will be really powerful. And they can make you, you can apply those three questions to something that you're doing this instant. Mm-hmm. And you can use them to grapple with the larger, you know, is my, what am I my job, my career, or whatever. Am I happy with in this, or do I need to make a change? I think those three questions will be very powerful.
So Kizzy and I recently started monitoring two things. One, our daily spending habits, and then two, our daily, what I call satisfaction levels. So we report at the end of the day and just created a Google Doc and are going through it. And we've been doing about 2 weeks now. And it's we do a 0 to 10 scale for how happy were we that day. And it's interesting to see the fluctuations, because life is, you know, it's a struggle. It's suffering sometimes. So I believe, you know, some of her days have gone from 3 on the low end all the way up to 8. Mine have gone from...
On the feeling?
On the satisfaction out of 10. Mine have gone, I think, from 4 or 5 to 8. But it's interesting because you can begin to see it's not necessarily correlated to how much you spend each day.
And it probably isn't exactly not.
Right. But the flip side of that is obviously it's difficult. You're creating a proxy, a substitution for happiness at the end of the day. Because some days you'll be really happy in one moment and then kicked the next. And it's all about the mindset. What value do you extract from that day? If you had to teach somebody else a lesson about that day, how are you going to tell that story? A victimization, a woe is me, or a, yeah, I was down, but not down for the count.
And I'll put a twist on it. What if, when you say, if you had to tell someone else a lesson about that day, what if that person that you were telling is yourself?
Mm.
So I want to bring up a quote that Viktor Frankl said. He said, live as if you were living a second time and as though that you had acted wrongly the first time.
Wow. That's pretty interesting. So basically you're coaching yourself every moment of the day to be your best possible self.
And I think that innately bakes in the Ferris Bueller quote that you have to pay attention to the current moment to try and improve on the way that you mistakenly lived it the time prior, right? So it automatically accepts the fact that you are present in the current moment, living your life and paying attention to it and trying to do it better than you did it the last time. And that's really hard to – I think it's a cool thought exercise.
It's a great thought experiment.
Because it's like it forces you to ask a question about every situation, which is, how did I mess this up last time? And so how do I avoid doing that again? Just that question, I think, is really powerful because you can remove all your like self-limiting bias and your negative thoughts about it by being like, I was probably negative about this last time. I probably conjured up negative emotions and made myself feel bad for no reason. You know, I didn't even live in this moment. I was, you know, buried in my phone, which we'll come back to. Or I was, you know, paying attention to something else, and I allowed this to slip by, and I wasn't grateful for it. I didn't seize the day, as they say. I mean, I just think it's a powerful thought exercise to wake up and think about if that's the first mind that comes, or first thought that comes through your mind, which is like, all right, I have this day today. Like, how do I live this day better than I did it last time? I think that's a really cool way to go.
I like that better because I jotted a point down that I disagreed with but maybe this was just you talking through the idea.
Yeah.
Is how can I do better what I messed up? And that's a real negative way to look at it. Because how can I do better? And that way is saying, okay, I did tons of great things. Let's make sure I repeat all of that and then minimize those gaps or those.
Well, I think we jumped right in. And I think one thing that I wanted to say at the beginning was that your life in whatever situation you are in, it's like a sliding scale, right? You use the 10-point analysis or 10-point scale of satisfaction with life. I think you can give every situation that you're in life, you can give it a 1 to 10 or a 0 to 100, right? And depending on where – it doesn't matter where you're at on that slider if you don't have control over it. You could be in, like, the worst situation. You could be in a 1 or a 2. And the question is not how do I change this situation to a 2 or 3 if I can't – if you have no control over it. It's how do I – make this feel like a 2 or a 3 to me, even though the situation remains to be a 1 or a 2. You get what, does that make sense?
Yeah.
And so I think that that's the same thing. It's like, not that you messed up. Sometimes you find yourself in negative situations that you didn't cause. Like going back to my health problem. Like, I don't put any blame on myself for that, you know? Because who knows why I got cancer. But looking at that situation and realizing that you just have to make the most of every situation that you find yourself in instead of wallowing in pain, sorrow, pity, negative emotions.
You are what you do every day.
Simple. And think every day.
Well, doing, you know, thinking is part
thinking
of doing.
Thinking and doing, yeah.
So you are what you do every day.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's finding those small opportunities, not obligations, to enhance yourself. Let me give we're both very good at this. And why are we good at this? Because our wives allow us to be good at this. We married the right people. We got lucky. This will be one of my change challenges, so I'll repeat it. But I'm a freaking master at getting rid of idle time. An example of idle time is if we have to go drive somewhere for an event. You will never find me anywhere with either out my computer, a book that I'm reading, a book that I'm taking notes on, something to grade, something to a report for a client. So, for instance, we just went out to a balloon glow in New Haven, Missouri, which, by the way, I'm an idiot. I get there and I'm thinking, okay, when are these damn things taking off? And Kizzy's like, what do you mean? And I said, well, it's a balloon event. When are they going to take off? She's like, no, they just glow at night. What a stupid idea, in my opinion. I said, whatever person marketed the first balloon event, they're like, how can we stretch this to 2 days? Hey, let's just have people come out the night before, and we'll call it a balloon glow, and they just sit on the ground. To me, that's like going to a horse race, and the horses are just in the stalls, and you just pet them the first day. So outside of that, that was goofy. But I brought my computer. I got 2 full hours worth of work done because, you know, she was able to drive each way.
I see, and here's the thing. I've learned, but I've learned that behavior, and I wonder if what we're talking about, this whole like value extraction, making the most out of everything, I wonder if that's the way to do it. And let me flip this around. Like, is it better to do that and be a productive person and be like, oh, you know, we talk about one of the things of happiness is productivity and being like, I went to bed and the fence I was building was 10 feet longer than when I woke up. Okay, great. So that helps you achieve that. Being in a car ride to the balloon glow and working on something on your computer helps you achieve that productivity. But let's do the flip side and just let's talk about just gratitude, saying that life moves pretty quick. If you don't stop and look around every once in a while, you might miss it. Like, what is there to be said for stopping and observing the physical world around you and trying to see the beauty in it? Like, if you're in a drive to some place, some rural place you've never been, should any of that time be spent observing, like, it's fall, the leaves are changing, and look at this beautiful countryside, and we're going to, it's the whole opposite of what you were thinking of, like, the balloons are never going to take off, this is stupid.
But hold on. I love where you're at, and I agree with you. So I got my work done by the time we got to Washington, Missouri, which is where her parents live. New Haven's about 20 minutes outside of Washington in the true, beautiful, hilly countryside. I did that so that I could focus and be in the moment for the event. I didn't let my kids see what, you know, what I was thinking or feeling. I talked to that Kizzy about that later at night. So my the whole drive from Washington to New Haven, I'm literally thinking and talking to Kizzy, this is where we need to buy land. And she's like, it's so cheap. And so we're just pointing out all these things.
It's
so
we took it in.
Yeah. So by me consciously making the choice to do my work and get it done by a certain point, it was so I could be in the moment with my family the rest of the night.
That's important. That's important. So there's a balance there that a lot of people lose. You have people who, well, I don't know why, but over the past, what, 10, 20 years, it almost became a badge of honor to call yourself a workaholic.
Yeah.
You know, and there's no balance there. Those people would miss the event because they were worried about the work that they weren't doing at the time, right? So you achieved that balance by saying, okay, so I'll miss the drive, but the drive is the least enjoyable part of this. The real enjoyable part is the event where I'm with my family, and I'll get this work off of my plate so it won't be hanging over my head, and then I'll really be able to live in that moment. That's awesome, and I love that. And I, you know, that's one of the things I think I've learned that from you. You know how you were saying I do that same thing?
Yeah, you're good at it. I didn't know that you did, but I just thought you did it.
Well, I think I've learned it from you, and I think I've learned it from Lauren. When I was younger, I would spend, and I still find myself, you're really good at switching. You went from work to enjoying that time with your family. I find myself, it takes me time to switch my mindsets. When I, that moment that I'm quit working, I'm unable to just shut it off. The Balloon Glow event would start and I would have just, you know, finished some work or basically quit working because you're never finished, right? And then into that Balloon Glow event, my mind would still have that momentum, that work momentum in it. And I would, it would take me a good amount of time to shut that off.
Yeah, but it would have because as soon as those balloons begin to take off, oh wait, no, they don't. They just sit on the fucking ground.
But you get what I'm saying.
Yeah, no, that's interesting.
So let me say another thing. Let me take this to another step. I find myself when I have long periods of downtime. We went to Colorado recently as a family, and I spent a whole week basically not working and not thinking about work, and man, it just got better and better and better throughout that week to the point where at the end of that week or like at midway through that week, because of the fact I wasn't even anticipating work again, I felt, you know, no stress.
Yeah, you came back really refreshed.
Refreshed and happy. It was all about people and it was none of the, you know, sometimes life feels like a line of ants stretching to the horizon, and each one of those ants is a task that you need to perform, you know, and it can be overwhelming. And this was the opposite of that. And I found that it takes me time to let go of the feeling of responsibility and work and whatever, and to get into that period of seeing beauty in whatever I'm doing and being grateful about everything about it. I think you're better at switching than I am.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if I am or not, but I guess I do have that ability to just switch. But it's not all positive. I can switch my emotions pretty quick. I can go from completely calm, normal, to angry, frustrated, loud Irish Zach, to instantly apologizing, giving a hug, and saying I love you. And mean it, but that's tough for people to deal with.
You can do that.
Like, my wife isn't that way. She needs that buffer zone of emotional change.
Her and I are the same in that way.
Exactly. Whereas I literally just go from A to B to C, and that makes it tough for others to deal with.
So we're touching on something that we talked about the other day, which is fulfillment, I guess. So making the most out of any moment turns into making the most out of life. And I guess our question, sometimes we question ourselves, like we're trying to build businesses. We're trying to run a podcast to capture our thoughts and our feelings. We have all of these things that we're doing to try to make the most out of life. But sometimes those opportunities feel like obligations. And
absolutely.
And sometimes it just feels like, oh, my week, looking at the calendar and looking at your week, and it's just like, look at all these obligations. And you said something the other day. You said, sometimes I look at people who don't have that calendar. If they looked at their weekly calendar, it'd be like, eh, you know, I've got a couple things that
Or they wouldn't even look at a calendar.
Yeah, or they wouldn't even
they
look at
it. They don't have a calendar.
Be like, I don't know. I'm going to be, you know, like the Big Lebowski type.
Right.
Right?
And, what day of the week is it?
And you said, you know, sometimes it's hard not looking at those people and feeling envious because they just seem to be happy about
And they've got their own things, I'm sure. We all do. But I look at my calendar, and it's overwhelming. But by choice. It's my choice. I'm doing it to myself. You know, should we bring up the 12-year-old self thing?
Yes.
You bring it up.
I basically said to Zach, you know, when we were 12 years old sitting at my parents' breakfast table, we would always talk about what we're going to do, who we're going to become, you know, how much money we're going to make. And I think it was a source of good entertainment for my dad. He would laugh about it all the time.
Yeah,
he would. But it's so amazing how, for the most part, we're living that out, you know? Like, to the point where we were like, oh, we're going to be best friends when we're older. And now we're still best friends. We live a mile away from each other. Our sons are going to be in the same class. It's unbelievable. We're actually making that happen. And on the flip side, Zach, I remember very clearly. Zach's like, I'll get my doctorate. I'm going to get my doctorate. And I just said to Zach the other day, you know, sometimes this feels so hard, but if we went back in time and we told our 12-year-old selves what we would have right now, where we would be, you know? And so just to use Zach as an example, I would say, you have your doctorate, you have a successful consulting business, you're about to work with the last company that will fulfill you working with every Fortune 500 company in St. Louis, and so on and so on. Like, our 12-year-old selves would be like elated. We'd be through the moon. We'd be like, oh, well, you ought to be very happy with that, right? Like, there's basically nothing else that you would want to do or want to achieve after that.
Well, and the family we got.
Oh, God.
Healthy, happy families. We got our nice cave
here. Yes. We live by each other. Like, our lives are so full of amazing things to be happy for. And then we contrasted that with what we were just talking about before, which was, man, when are we going to make it? Like, when are we going to actually make it? And then we realized that's never going to happen. There will never be I made it. There will never be a day where we wake up and feel like, yeah, we made it.
Yeah, to me, if you listen to our podcast regularly or talk to me regularly, you know I love movies and movie quotes. And I think I do, because that's just the best form of storytelling we have as humans to date. And so people can relate to that. It simplifies things, and those images stick in our mind, just like music. And so there's the movie The Founder. If you haven't seen it, you need to see it. It's really good. But there's a scene where Ray Kroc is starting to hit it. He's starting to finally sell some McDonald's franchises at the age of 52 and get a little bit of local fame. But he's a mega workaholic, and his wife at the time said, "Is it ever going to be enough?" And he's pouring a whiskey at his house in this film, and he pauses and he looks her right in the eye and he goes, "No, it's never going to be enough." And he was honest. But that's how, if I looked at my 12-year-old self, and that 12-year-old says, "How is it? How is achieving your goals and dreams and visions? You know, should I get to that point?" I lean towards no. I lean towards no.
Yeah.
Because it is, I'm a hamster on a wheel by choice. I'm building the wheel, but man, it's just, it's a grind, and it's fun, and I can focus on this stuff. But if I just shifted my mindset completely away from attachments and delusions and what others expect of me, life could be simpler.
It could be simpler. It could be looking out the window on the car ride.
Yes, and the dog with the tongue out the window.
It could be.
We were watching a great movie last night called Chef. Very good movie. You should check it out. Family friendly. And Kizzy and I were just talking about people, successful people, and we were naming a few. And I named quite a few older dudes. And I'm like, they sometimes don't seem happy. They're not as happy as other people. Oh, we were talking about Latin music. And she's like, I love how wherever there's Latin salsa music, they want to dance. Like, they just love it. And it brings you that positive energy. And then I started joking about, like, old white guys, of which I'll be one. And we're just crotchety. We get crotchety. And she goes, yeah, well, you're all just concerned with making the world go round.
It is true.
And I thought that was really well said.
That's very
well said. And not good, necessarily.
No, that's actually an awesome quote.
Yeah.
Write that one down. Kizzy Schaefer.
Okay. Here's a funny one. And we can go back to whatever you want. But this something you said earlier made me think of this. And it's a dumb Facebook meme. But it's fairly accurate. Trying to find value in life. What do all the successful people do? Go to bed early. Rise early. Get your day started right away. Why is sleeping in lazy, but going to bed early isn't?
That's a good one. That's a good one.
Yeah, so some move. It's that I'm starting the all sleep matters movement. Because if you're going to bed early, you're not using those hours in the evening to do something. Just like if you sleep in, you're not using the ones in the morning.
You're right.
It's yeah. Totally hypocritical.
Yeah, I think you're right. Although, to play the devil on this one, devil's advocate, I find that my first hours of the day are my most useful. I am at my sharpest and at my best. Not everyone is that way. Yeah,
you need to know yourself when you're most productive.
That's true. Yep. Yep.
Like Adrian, he's a night owl. I'm most productive from 5 a.m. to 1 p.m.
Me too.
And then I fall off pretty quickly, cognitively.
Yeah, me too.
You had a picture up on your computer before we started this. You had two pictures, and you wanted to talk about them. They involve camera phones.
Yes. This one is a section in my notes about this episode that is I titled, Put Down Your Phone. And I just wrote a couple sentences from some things I was looking at on the internet about how we live in our phones too much now, and we take our attention away from the present. And these are a couple things I thought were interesting that we could talk about. Number one, new research suggests that the amount of time you spend on your phone correlates with the frequency and severity of negative thoughts you're ultimately trying to suppress.
Ooh, that's good.
So we're trying to, like, escape our present moment, right? We're looking for something in this phone. I see the phone as, like, an addiction, like a drug.
Oh, yeah.
And I wanted to talk about how, you know, if I'm having a tough day or even a boring day, or heck, it doesn't even have to be that, I'm just searching for positive emotions. I have certain things on my phone that I know give me this like weird hit. They give me a weird hit of adrenaline and serotonin. Fantasy football on my phone, right? I want to go find some good news or a player I can pick up or something like that. You know, let's be honest. It's a hobby. It's sure it's fun, but yeah. I mean,
we're not feeding our families.
Yeah, but I allow the phone to be a crutch to where I'll be in a situation that I don't want to be dealing with, and it's like, oh, I can go check fantasy football. Maybe there's like a news story about fantasy football, you know? Or you know, we were complaining about the weather and how hot it's been, right? Like, oh, I'll check the weather again. Maybe that's changed. Maybe it's not going to be hot 3 days from now, like they've been saying it was going to be. I just, you know, there's a slight chance. Or, you know, like stock prices. I'll go look at those. Or maybe it doesn't matter. But I've noticed these things that I will check over and over again that give me these short periods where I get that serotonin hit. And so it is like a drug. It is like an addiction. Man, how do you get over that?
Well, you're doing the right thing and recognizing that it's there.
Yeah.
I am, first of all, let me qualify. I am probably one of the most addicted people of all of our friends to our phone, because I get all my different emails for the businesses and organizations I'm affiliated with shot to Gmail, which is on my phone. So, I mean, I'm constantly getting dinged, as are you. I take a lot of pictures, a lot, man. I'm looking at that. I have over 1,000 videos now. I have close to 20,000 pictures. I feel like a Japanese tourist. It's crazy.
Yeah.
But, so my point is.
Well, there was a picture, what we're talking about. There was a pic. There were pictures that were contrasted. It was a picture from the 90s of President Clinton and a crowd standing around him. And everyone is looking at him, and they're smiling, and they're excited to be in, you know, in his presence or shake his hand or whatever. And then a picture from a couple years ago. and it's President Obama in a similar situation. But nobody's smiling. Nobody's looking excited. They're all holding up their phones, looking through their phones.
A sea of phones.
They're not experiencing the situation. I've noticed that at the last concert I was at, and I don't remember which one it was, I did take a picture or two just to document it, but I purposely was like, that's it, done.
Good, but you made that, you had a plan, or in the moment you made that conscious decision to experience the moment.
But it took so many concert-like experiences or events or whatever, it took me losing those to my phone. You know, you never get the picture as good as you wanted it. The video never really represents the memory that you have
How often do people go back and look at that shit?
Yeah, and you never go right? back.
We've tried to build in family picture night where I beam it up on our Apple TV and, you know, we just have them scrolling in the background. We've done it a few times. I wanted to make it consistent, but we just haven't. It's hard.
And then I'm sure while the pictures are scrolling, you want to be talking and interacting with each other, not looking at old pictures, right? It's a crazy thing.
Well, I just think when Japanese tourists, they always get that stereotype, but they tend to take a lot of photos. And I always wondered, like, what do they do with all? Do they have a centralized vault in Japan where all the photos just go to, and they're creating some unbelievable photo project? But to me, I just think not even just that's a milestone moment. Listening to a president talk. Now think of all the shit going on in the streets of St. Louis,
mm-hmm.
protests mm-hmm. or. Acts of violence, acts of resistance. I truly believe that 9 out of 10 people now, if they're in a situation like that, they would rather try to capture action than take action. If something bad happens, they're going to pull out their phone to document it rather than ask someone for help or offer assistance. That's crazy to me, and that's unacceptable. That's a knock on our species. I truly believe that.
Yeah, I agree with you. And it's just an extension of not living the moment, not living with intention, instead trying to like document it or experience it.
And then hearing people rationalize why they do it is hilarious. There's a great study that's been out there. They created fake assault situations on a campus in front of students with the sole purpose to determine will they try to help out right. someone or right. videotape.
Right.
Every single person videotaped. Every single one.
Wow.
So it was sad.
You know what? So that's an instance of not doing, right?
You're correct.
Not doing. Observing, documenting, you know, not doing.
Not adding value
to your current situation. And this brings me up. You had a three-step process earlier. You had three questions yep. that you told people to ask if they find themselves in a situation that they're unhappy with. I found something that was similar online, and I like this. This is a five-step process, but I'll try to go through it quickly. Number one, ask yourself, is this a problem or a puzzle? And it said things like homelessness, addiction, those are problems, right? So those are problems that are going to take a long time to solve. A situational negative, like losing a big client or, you know, the roof blowing off your house or getting divorced, those are puzzles. Those are puzzles on how to move forward in a way that is in your highest service. And I added a note to that, and I said, note the word highest, which doesn't mean high. I'll tie it back to what I was saying earlier, but you could be in a bad situation, and you can feel really low. But you can make that low lower with your mindset, or you can accept where you're at and take the next step to improving yourself, and all of a sudden it doesn't feel so low. So I just wanted to bring that out. So ask yourself, is it a problem or a puzzle? Number two, ask yourself, what is happening right now? Bring yourself to the present moment. So release past memories that are skewing your viewpoint downward and making you feel lower. And let go of any future expectations that are putting pressure on you to perform in any
Frozen.
Way.
It's the movie Frozen. Let it go.
Yes.
And that's tough to do.
It is so hard to do. So, and bring yourself into that present moment. It's a very Buddhist
But that's tough because principle. Of our previous episode, pride.
Yeah.
That's why we don't want to let things go.
That's good. The next step, it says, ask yourself, what am I grateful for? And I just said, because gratitude equals positive emotion. If that's what life is, you're trying to bring that into that situation. This next piece I like, which is, what is my intention? So whenever you decide what you're going to do or you're thinking about what you're going to do about this situation, focus on what you want, not what you don't. So tying back into the whole Tony Robbins, like whatever you focus, whatever you look at, you're going to steer the car into. Mm-hmm. That's where you're going to head. Focus on what you want, not on what you don't, if you're in a tough situation. And then the last one, which is what we're talking about here, which is you were saying people are just taking pictures. They're not doing anything. They're not interjecting. This is the last step. Ask yourself, what thoughts or actions can I entertain that are supportive of my intention? So once you've decided what your intention is, do something to make that intention real. So do and think. Think and do to make that real. So this basically says the opposite of this is getting stuck in limiting beliefs, negative self-talk, competing intentions, focusing on the negative, basically. Instead, go back to that intention. What is it that you want? And then how do you think in line with that? And how do you do in line with that? You know, that whole motion creates emotion thing.
Yeah.
Take the first step. Change your environment.
Good.
I like that.
Absolutely. Well, do you have any other general thoughts before we do change challenges?
Yes.
Yeah. What do we got?
The last one I wanted to say is based on a quote by Jim Carrey, and I really love this quote. It says, "Our eyes are not viewers. They're also projectors that are running a second story over the picture that we see in front of us all the time. Fear is writing that script, and the working title is I'll Never Be Enough."
Damn, that's good.
Isn't that awesome? I thought that was so relevant, and it fits perfectly on everything that we just talked about. And so if I had to take one lesson out of the discussion that we've had right now, the lesson that I'm going to take for moving forward is when I'm in that car ride to go see the balloon glow, sometimes it's going to be more beneficial for me to pull out my laptop and get some stuff done and be productive. But sometimes it's going to be better for me to put that laptop down and enjoy the changing colors of the leaves of the countryside. And making the most of my situation is going to be being ultra aware of where I'm at in life and what the situation is, what my intentions are and what I want, and then fulfilling it in one of those two ways and finding that balance between the two.
That's good. I mean, to me, everything we're talking about with extracting value, adding value, is living with intent. People that are designers, they live with intent. They look around them and they think, how can this be better? How can I make this better? How can we redesign this thing, this process, this relationship? And so to me, it goes back to your intentions. And just remember that good intentions don't sanitize negative outcomes.
Yeah.
So are you ready for change challenges?
I think so, but I think I want to I love this. I think this is the most powerful part of what we've talked about. And I want to focus on
that.
Living with intent and thinking with intent and doing with intent. You got to focus on all three of those things. And when we asked ourselves that question, right? When you said, well, if I was talking to my 12-year-old self and telling him, you know, him asking, is it worth it? You know, like to achieve all these goals, to put this much work into it, is it worth it? We said, well, I'm leaning towards no right now. But I think you got to understand where you're coming from. You're coming from a place where you have done that. And your mind is wondering, would I be happier if I hadn't?
Yeah, the grass is greener.
It's the grass is greener thing. And so I just think that maybe the answer isn't that to the 12-year-old. I think the answer to the 12-year-old is yes. Like, always strive for your goals. Always live with that intent. But sometimes your intent should be deriving value from your present situation, no matter what it is.
For me, the answer would most likely be yes, .. if.
Yes. What's the if?
If you are able to stop and smell the roses and do what Michael Jordan's really deep quote was.
Yeah, and that's hilarious.
Say his quote.
Oh, God, I'd have to pull it up.
I remember. It is Michael Jordan said, just turn a negative situation into a positive one.
Yes, whatever situation you're in, if it's negative,
but it's, turn it so into positive. So that would be the yes if. It's Zach, it's going to be a struggle. You're going to enjoy the struggle. It's going to make you who you are. But you need to remember to look at obligations as opportunities. You need to basically go listen to Life Lab, Zach, and try to apply all these lessons. That would be the yes if, rather than no because. You're not going to enjoy life because. I wouldn't want to do that answer.
I love that. I love that. And that's the key is looking at obligations as opportunities.
Yeah, that was Dave Ponder right there.
I love that.
That's good.
That was just luck that I stumbled upon that. And I would say, here's a question, and then we'll do change challenges. If something always feels like an obligation, when is it time to cut it out of your life? And
yeah, I mean, that's an important question, but I
don't think there's a good answer.
Yeah, there's some things that will always be a bit of an obligation.
Yeah.
If you're trying to be a good person, like feeding my children.
Oh,
like,
sure. Oh, sure.
Stuff like that. Sure. There's certain physiological things or safety-oriented needs. That could be a whole nother episode.
Yeah. Okay.
Anyway, obligation versus opportunity.
It's something to think about. Things that are extraneous or that you've worked into your life with intent in the past, that maybe your intent has changed and they don't feel like opportunities anymore. You don't derive joy from them. You know, maybe it's time to start thinking about taking those out.
I want to end with a Socrates quote, and me paraphrasing is, you can have all the knowledge, riches, things in the world, and if you don't have people to share those things with, you have nothing. So to me, it goes back to the connections and the relationships that we have. That's what adds value to the majority of humans' lives. That's how you extract value, is experiencing life with another person. So for me, the two words that capture extracting value from life are fulfilled balance. You need to have balance in life, from work to family to relationships to emotions to hobbies to pleasure to pain. But through all of that, you need to be fulfilled.
Yeah, that's absolutely right. It's so funny because I was a procrastinator when I was younger, and I would delay negative emotions, and I would fill my present time with positive emotions of being with friends, being with family, doing things that I enjoy. And then whenever school would hit and I hadn't done my homework, well, that's when I would have to deal with those negative emotions, and I would live that pattern over and over. I think what you are just talking about is like, no, like, don't do that. But also don't do the other. Don't just do your homework and lose your connectedness and in those fun experiences. Find a balance between the two. Get the work done and then use that time.
Bart always tells a story about me, one of our best friends. I don't remember it necessarily this way, but he went to Lindenwood University for a few years, which was pretty about an hour from SLU. And I'd head over there and we'd party. And you know, he always tells the story that we were up till 3 a.m. one night, and he wakes up to go to the restroom at like 5 or 5:30. And he said, I'm up on the floor with my laptop open, writing a paper, finishing a paper that was due. And he's like, oh, when's this due? I'm like, oh, a couple days. He's like, what? I don't remember this. He tells the story. And I guess I couldn't sleep and got up and started hammering away on this thing. But that, to me, is that idle time. But when we talk about that idle time, this is my first change challenge. It doesn't just have to be work. It can be family. So on the drive, you can play 20 questions with your kids. You can do goofy things. And my wife, Kizzy's really good at that. And
so you're good at that too, being spontaneous.
I am, but I'm talking specifically with the kids. So in the car ride, you can turn a boring highway car ride that you do a million times. You can turn it into a way to extract new value. Just tell a story where you go around and each person has to add a line, whatever. It doesn't need to just be laptop
work. Yeah.
It can be family work, because being in a family is work.
Or if you don't have kids, do something that's fun, you know? Do a crossword puzzle or Sudoku.
Make a phone call. Everyone's like, I need to reach out. Put them on speakerphone and call a friend while you're driving.
Which is one of the five regrets that the AARP article that we bring up in every episode. Not
staying in connection with my friends.
Yes.
What about one of your change challenges? Because I got a bunch. I don't want to monopolize.
No, you monopolize because I don't.
Okay. So the first one is find some idle time, something you do often, and find a way to extract value from that time. So whether it's waiting in line, I hate lines, whether it's the drive time, if you can get your spouse or somebody else to drive, use that time effectively to accomplish something.
I like to listen to podcasts.
Yeah, there you go.
Lots of people like to listen to books on tape.
Perfect. Gary loves books on tape.
Yeah, and whenever you're in line or whether you're driving, the times I do it are these times. When I'm at the gym, I listen to podcasts. When I'm driving, when I'm in line at a grocery store. Actually, when I'm walking around a grocery store. It's not like you're talking to anybody, mm-hmm. you know, when I'm mowing the lawn.
These are all great opportunities to accomplish multiple things at once.
Mm-hmm. Things that, like driving and mowing the lawn, I think are two great examples where it's like you don't need to give your primary attention to the action that you're performing. And but, there's nothing, there's like no value that I'm going to get out of mowing the lawn. It's not like I'm going to like, oh man, I really love this next foot of grass that I'm going to chop a little bit. And I just want to stop and just smell the cut of the grass.
But we're choosing right now to focus on that productive, cross the tasks off. Let's make sure we're multitasking. You could just smell that grass. Research has shown that fresh cut grass creates one of the strongest memories in
your
head.
You're right. Okay.
So, you know.
Well, maybe there's a balance there.
A balance.
Maybe.
So maybe sometimes you just smell those damn
grass clippings. Maybe sometimes I've just got to be like, I am mowing this lawn. I am going to experience
Dave's got the biggest smile on his face while he's mowing the lawn.
Oh, I love it.
All right. My next change challenge. This one's an important one. It's easy. The fulfillment formula. Am I happy? Does this bring out the best in me? Does it give me the opportunity to bring out the best in others? If one of those is no, you probably should reevaluate what you're doing. I'm going to steal one that Dave, the next two are from Dave, but I'll present them to you all as challenges. One picture per event. So it forces you to take a good one to capture and document, but then it forces you to be in the moment. But for someone like me, if my phone's in my pocket, I'm Pavlov's dog. I'm trained. Any vibration or sound that goes off, I get it out. So I just can't bring my phone to stuff like that. But my wife does, and she's not addicted to hers. So then we just take a picture or two on hers. That's how I manage that problem. I'll bring my big, fancy DSR camera that's not connected to internet. So then I literally am just taking some cool photos, which I think is completely different than surfing the internet and checking my emails. So that's how I do it.
That's good.
If we go on a walk, I used to trick myself and say, oh, no, you know, you need this in case Claudia does something cool to capture it. So I'd leave the phone at home, and if we need to do that, Kizzy has her phone, and I'm not checking my email.
Well, so that change challenge, take one picture or – I like – you kind of did two there, and I like the second one, and I want to expand on the second one. The first one is great. Take one picture at an event and then move on and enjoy the event. Immerse yourself in the event. Use your brain camera. You'll never lose that.
That's right.
And then I would say the second part of that, which I thought was awesome, work some disconnected time into every day. Into every day.
Yeah, screen free.
So what I'd like to do to myself, the way I'm going to do this, and I am going to do this, I generally take from about 5:15, 5:30, whenever it is I quit working, until the time the kids go to bed. It's usually about 8:30. And that is kid time. That is me and Marin and Dylan and Lauren time. That is time to, you know, help cook dinner, help feed the kids dinner, bath time, maybe watch a little bit of a Disney movie, read books to the kids, and put them in bed. That's what those three and a half hours are about. I need to do those sans phone. There is no reason for me to have a phone during those times. And I find myself often, especially if it's a, you know, Dylan's crying because he's teething and I've got these negative emotions, I find myself reaching for that serotonin box and trying to find some news about, you know, oh, some thing I'm investing in is going to go up in the future or something. You know, one of the things that I find that gives myself pleasure. And I miss that time with my kids, right? It's the same thing. It's like there will be a day when I long for the time that Dylan was being a pain in the butt because I was having to change his diaper.
Because he's not around.
Yeah, because he's out hanging out with his friends and he's too cool for dad. I need to immerse myself in that time.
Good. Excellent. The next one is a more psychological challenge that, again, is from Dave. Pick something in your life that's an obligation and try to reframe it mentally as an opportunity, but pay attention to how that makes you feel and how it changes it. Because if you do it correctly and you actually make that mental shift, it changes you.
It absolutely.
It changed me the other – and I've done it before, but it was very memorable when I made that shift. It was just – it made the day.
I love that story. And it goes back to your beginning with that, right? It's like, why did I start doing this in the first place?
Right.
I thought this was something I was going to love and I wanted to enjoy. It was an accomplishment I wanted to achieve. Why am I looking at it negatively now?
Yep.
Where along the line did it go from an opportunity to an obligation? Switch it back.
Yep.
I love it.
The last one is the more morbid one, but I think it's a powerful one. Write your obituary.
Ooh.
Write your obituary. What do you want people to be reading about life? What value did you take from life and give back to life and others? How did you make the world, leave the world better, impacted? And it doesn't have to be on a global scale, obviously. It can be a very small scale, but what's that going to say when we're gone? What's your obit going to say?
I want to take the... I want to tie this back to pride when I talk about what my obituary would look like and say, I want to take no, I don't want to be pretentious about it. I don't want to take any pressure and put any pressure on myself that I have to leave some sort of amazing legacy. Instead, I want the people closest to me to feel nothing but positive thoughts about me when they think about me. And even if that my obituary is fairly nondescript, you know, three sentences that say, oh, he was a good guy. You know, I want the people who I love to, I want to have made their lives better. And I kind of think if you focus on that, it'll naturally surpass that. And who knows what it'll be. You could have an amazing legacy. But if you put the pressure of your, like, oh, I've got to have this amazing legacy. This guy was a, you know, world changer, blah, blah. If that's the thing that you want your obituary to be, I think you're going to put too much pressure on yourself and you can have, you know, you can lose your enjoyment of the present. So
that's a good point. That wasn't the point of the challenge.
No, I know, yeah. I know. But
No, you make an excellent point.
That's my thought.
Yeah.
Okay. Awesome, man. Right. Those are some really great change challenges, Zach.
Well, they're both of ours.
I loved this episode.
Yeah, it was fun.
It turned into... almost like balance in life.
Well,
it
really, for me, this one has maybe fulfilled the overall original reason why we started Life Lab in the first place.
Yeah.
Trying to add value, talking about what makes us happy.
You're right.
Our connections. So far for me, this is the spirit, if you will, of Life Lab.
I agree. And it's never done. It's never done. And it's almost like just trying to stay on track with it. Because there will be days where, like, I'll leave this right now, and we've been talking about this for almost an hour or whatever, and this will be present in my mind. I'm going to have a really great, right, you know, rest of the day today.
Well, we almost start every single one of these as an obligation, but immediately it becomes an opportunity. Do you notice that?
Yeah. I leave these feeling refreshed, happy, ready to, like, go live my day to the fullest, and I usually do. It's... The challenge in life is staying on track with it.
Yep.
So put this into every situation. Keep yourself on track, people. If you find yourself with those negative thoughts, those negative emotions, you find yourself searching for that hit in your phone, bring yourself back on track.
Absolutely.
All right.
And as we always say at Life Lab, experiment with
life. Experiment with life.
Have a good one.